Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. A great show so far today. Jim Carafano and Ben Capel, who is the co-producer of Am I Racist, on with us in the 1 o'clock hour. And really the highlight of the show was buffet etiquette in Wiggins America 1245. I just don't know how you could have missed that.
Well, I think people tune in for that content. The politics is just sort of a bonus. So if you're a big buffet person, you might want to listen to that
what
to make sure you're doing
things.
What kind
of statement is that to make?
Yeah.
Right. What do you mean if you're a big buffet person?
You're making an awful lot of assumptions here, Ryan.
It's really rude.
And also, if you are not a big buffet person, maybe you should become one and listen to Wiggins America 1245 on the podcast.
Were any of the buffet etiquette suggestions that you made, have you offended any of those? Any of them? Any one of them?
Yeah, the one about eating in line, I think I've done that.
Ryan.
Oh, man.
Like I said, I think I've eaten a piece of sushi here or there while in line.
Why don't you just put the one piece on your plate, go back, try it, and then decide, yeah, I do like those. I'll get another one.
It's a lot of walking.
Let me just, first and foremost, complete full disclosure, say that I don't eat at buffets, and I also have never had sushi. So I'm not in a position to really comment on these things from an empathetic place.
Okay.
Buffet sushi?
You know what? There is a lot to say about that. But Brad, I'll let you speak first. We both like sushi.
Yes.
We have been on a sushi date before with our wives.
We brought our wives along. It wasn't just you and me, but yes.
It was a double date.
And we single date had frushi at...
Yeah, on accident.
Disney World, and did not realize that we looked like we were on a date until we were feeding it to each other.
You were wearing buttons that congratulated your 5-year anniversary.
So that was a dead giveaway that we might be together. We weren't.
You were together. You were together wearing anniversary buttons at the Frushi bar.
Well, we were together with everybody else.
Those are all facts.
We walked from Mexico to Japan at Epcot with those buttons
on. That sounds like something Joe Biden would say.
Oh, my gosh.
We did.
Back in my day,
we walked from Mexico to Japan, eating a little bit every step of the way.
You know, before the continents broke apart.
Hey, remember back? Railroad, man.
Not a joke. Pangea.
Pangea.
Not a joke. So anyway, Brad and I are sushi connoisseurs. We eat lots of sushi.
I wouldn't go that far, but I do love sushi.
People love sushi in the way that we do. So. This is now Kamala Harris time speak.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
It's a salad roll.
Go back to the journey from Mexico to Japan.
What did you think? What do you think of buffet sushi?
No buffet sushi.
You won't eat it?
No.
See, I won't eat gas station sushi.
Me neither.
Why? You have standards?
I do. Gas station sushi and some, not all, supermarket sushi. Now, some of them have a sushi chef there every day.
Yes.
That's good sushi.
Yes.
Okay. I have questions. My assumption, and this is admittedly, I know nothing about sushi, but my assumption is that all sushi has raw fish in it.
That's incorrect.
That's incorrect. Yeah.
What doesn't?
California roll doesn't.
What's that have in it?
Yeah. Certain types of rolls.
Does it have fish in it?
I think they have imitation crab.
Imitation
maybe.
Crab. There are veggie
That's
rolls.
Fish.
Yeah, but it's not raw.
It's not raw. It's cooked.
There's lots
of veggie rolls,
so
avocado
rolls. Not all sushi has raw fish in it.
Right.
Is there any sushi that has no seafood in it?
Yeah. Avocado roll is a great one. My kids love that one.
What's in that?
Just avocado and sushi, basically, and maybe some seasoning.
But when you say sushi, what's sushi?
It's that type of food. It's pretty much rolls of rice.
You said
with
avocado
in the middle
sushi
of it.
Has avocado and sushi in it.
Sushi doesn't mean raw fish.
But I'm asking you to define what it means.
So an avocado roll is going to have something like, it's going to have rice either on the outside or on the inside. It's going to be wrapped with seaweed, and then it's going to have like cucumber.
Do you eat the seaweed?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I don't.
That's what holds it together. It's actually very good.
If you don't like the seaweed, you can always get a soy wrap, I think is what they call it.
Yeah, I'm going to make all the modifications and turn it into a cheeseburger. How about some beef between some bread with some cheese?
Cheddar, sharp. What you're looking for is
American
maybe
food.
Like nigiri. these are just individual
sushi.
Rolls. Yeah. These aren't maki in the sense that you're thinking of sushi.
You're mocking me.
I'm not.
Yes, you are. I don't know any of the words.
Real Japanese words.
Yeah, I believe Maki's you. You've been.
Maki. No. Maki roll is just a roll.
It's good.
And then
That's
nigiri
sushi.
Is something placed over rice.
You know, okay, so just for a hot second, you guys know how picky of an eater I am.
Yeah, you wouldn't like anything there.
Is there an option for me that doesn't involve me eating the grilled cheese off the kids' menu at a sushi restaurant?
Let's see here. Yes, I think. I think we could probably find a sushi bowl that you'd like, which is a bed of rice. You'd be okay with that, right?
I don't really like rice.
Well, you're going to be not eating sushi then.
I'm not opposed to rice, like from a, like a, like I don't eat seafood. I don't want to eat seafood. Nuh-uh. Rice, I don't prefer, but okay. I would eat it.
Okay. So if you start with a bed of rice and then I'm trying to think of something that would not be fish that you'd put over rice.
That's the problem. Chicken.
Well, like if you went to, like, I don't know, like, The restaurant I went to is also, they also have Chinese food, so you could order off the Chinese menu if you like Chinese food.
I've had Chinese food.
And then, I mean, Chinese food is, it's not fish. You can get chicken or beef or, beef and broccoli, stuff like that. So you could find something like
that.
When
I was growing up, my parents, if they got Chinese food, would get fried rice and I would eat that.
Yeah, it's good. Mm-hmm.
But I don't want it. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do, which means you probably... You know what, though? If you haven't had it since you were a kid, it's worth trying something that you'd feel safe enough.
Well, that's what I'm asking, because
trying to see if maybe you do like it.
The seafood thing is anywhere. Like, the closest I will get to eating seafood is my late grandpa's fish fry catfish or bass that he caught in a lake in Alhambra.
Okay.
So that's not happening. I don't want it. I don't crave it. I smell it. I don't like it. And I'm 40, so I don't have to eat it. That's what I have determined at this point. But there are worlds of food out there that I have no experience in because I'm so uneducated and unexperienced. Maybe you go into a sushi restaurant and there's like sushi for wimpy beginners. And I don't know what that thing is. Or Chinese food. Like, I've heard orange chicken sounds like it would probably be pretty good.
Orange chicken is good,
yeah. Great.
I also, in my mind, have the understanding that Chinese food is not healthy. Is that true?
I mean, I don't know anymore.
American Chinese food.
Yeah, they say it's loaded with MSG. It really depends on where you go anymore.
Orange chicken is fried bits of chicken in a sauce made with oranges.
That doesn't sound bad. But it sounds unhealthy, which is another reason why I haven't dove head. What I don't want to do is love yet another very unhealthy food. So I just haven't.
So this isn't sushi, but it's a way to try Asian food that a lot of people who don't love Asian food will order this dish. Have you ever heard of pad thai?
No.
Okay. It's basically just rice noodles, peanut sauce. So if you like peanut butter, which I assume you do.
Sure.
It's going to taste like a peanutty rice chicken dish. Or not even rice, rice noodles. So it's noodles, it's kind of a peanut sauce, and it's chicken. If you want to add maybe some broccoli, some other things to that, you can, but you don't have to. It's a really good entry-level Asian dish.
Salads are delicious, but broccoli's probably my favorite vegetable. People are asking about shrimp tempura. I don't eat shrimp. That is...
That's off?
Seafood. I don't eat any...
You don't like shrimp.
Not a single thing that comes out of the sea do I want to eat.
Okay.
Or the lake or the pond. None of it. And I used to be... people would be like, oh, just try this. And this stupid line that it tastes like chicken. Well, then let me eat chicken.
Yeah.
I don't need to... If it tastes like chicken, but not quite chicken, then I just would rather have the chicken.
You really... need to open the door, and I mean like throw the doors open and enter the magical wonderland that is Asian style chicken, because there are so many variants that if you like chicken,
teriyaki chicken,
oh my gosh.
But when it comes to chicken, if I get even a teeny tiny funny bite of chicken, I'm done for a while.
A teeny tiny funny bite, describe that.
Okay, first of all, we've already gone over when I went to, what restaurant was it? And I asked them if they used all white chicken breast meat in the drive-thru, and they just stopped talking to me in the drive-thru. She was so, and then the answer was, I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know.
Wait, I do remember that.
Yeah, I can't.
That wasn't long ago.
I think it was a Wendy's. I wanted to know. Okay. I think it was. I know that it was after a track meet in Belleville. And I will not eat a piece of chicken on a sandwich if it is the spongy kind of processed chicken. I need it to look like I will take the chicken and pull it apart to make sure that the chicken shreds kind of.
Okay.
So that you know that it's an actual piece of chicken breast. Now, I like a chicken sandwich. That's totally fine. But it needs to be real chicken. And what was the question that you asked before? You said I need to...
Yeah, open your mind.
Yeah, throw open the doors into the world of Asian chicken.
I don't like that kind of chicken. If I'm eating a whole chicken breast, which I completely understand, if you're eating a whole chicken breast, it is the breast of a cluck cluck chicken. And if that is the case, there might be a vein or some body part in there that doesn't look like the pull apart chicken.
Mm-hmm.
It might bounce back a little bit when you eat.
Well,
I'm done. Not eating any more chicken for a while.
Then you're probably not going to want to do Chinese chicken.
Well, not a cheap Chinese restaurant.
Not a cheap Chinese chicken. Chicken of China. The Chinese chicken.
Have a drumstick. And
your brain starts clicking?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Watch the next files.
With the lights on. With no lights on.
The dollar rays on? What is that line? I don't know.
I don't know. Nobody knows.
I hope the smoking man's in this one.
Like Harrison Ford, I'm being frantic. Like Sting, I'm tantric.
Ooh.
Guaranteed to satisfy.
Thank you. Thank you.
Man.
All of that to say.
Somebody diagram this segment, please.
Is that flagpole sitta?
Where are we going? No.
The
bare naked ladies.
Right before we started this segment, do you remember what I said?
I don't have anything. You want to go home?
Yeah.
This is really evidence of that. So thank you. I will bring it back and say, after all of these things that you're saying, well, I don't like this, I wouldn't do this, I still think pad thai is the way to go for you.
Well, I'll take recommendations.
Yeah, write that down.
Rick once says, what do you eat, Annie Fry? What do you guys see me eat?
I see you eat chicken strips, all white meat. I've seen you eat burgers, cheeseburgers. Like you said, sharp cheddar, but cheeseburgers.
I don't watch you eat. It's kind of weird.
I was going to say. I generally eat.
Yeah, pizza.
Okay, so Brad has witnessed me eating burgers and chicken, fried chicken fingers and pizza.
Chicken wings.
That's not really my diet, but.
We've gone to Buffalo Wild.
Yeah. Boneless.
Yeah.
Every day I eat 2 Greek yogurts in the morning with a protein shake, a Premier chocolate protein shake, and I have a coffee. And that has me around, I think, 60 grams of protein. And that usually carries me until about 4 or 5 o'clock, where I eat whatever we eat at home. My husband makes roasts and noodles and all of that stuff. But it's all very, like, steak and taters.
There's nothing wrong with steak and taters.
Mm-mm.
Don't get me wrong. I just think that they're, you know, like you said, if you haven't had it since you're a kid, maybe it's time to at least dip a toe in the waters.
Probably not. David says filet mignon for Annie, no bones. That is what I get when we go eat steak.
That's what we just got.
You give half of it to Hannah
on Saturday.
That was a big piece of meat. She ate the rest of the meat on my plate. That actually did happen. All right, let's take a quick break. I need to know from you guys, should Donald Trump agree to debate Kamala Harris again? Yes or no? We'll talk about that when we come back. Get to some of your comments as well. Betsy says no. Some states have already started voting, I think. No point. Ender says, nah, I've only said it about 100 times, but these debates aren't debates. And therefore are pointless. They've devolved into crap slinging contests. That's not wrong. Ray says, but I would like to see Vance and Walls go at it. I guess that's in addition to a regular debate. He's looking forward to the vice president debate. And John said Trump should debate again, but only if it's on Fox. As if Kamala is going to agree to that. Let us know what you think on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. We'll be right back. This song by The Darkness is from 2003.
Yeah.
I think I always thought it was from the 80s.
Well, it's supposed to sound like an 80s song. So
well,
they did their job. Yeah, it's supposed to sound like a hair metal song.
I said before we came on, I go, what was the approximate year of this? I was thinking, I guess 90s. And you said 2010.
I said 2010, yeah. I thought it was a little later than 2003.
I guess I thought when it came on the scene, 2003 would have been my freshman year of college. I guess I thought that it was a throwback. I don't know. It was so uncool.
It is a throwback. I mean,
but it's a new song.
It's a newer song, yeah.
It's not what would be considered an oldie now. Do you remember when we were growing up and listening to KLOU 103.3 and it was oldies and it was like barbershop bops?
Yeah, it was all 50s
stuff. The Turtles.
Yeah.
So that would have been what, the 90s? That music was 40 years old?
Yeah.
Think about that for a second.
See, I think by the 90s, especially the late 90s, it was starting to be more into the 60s.
I saw a post the other day, and it said, you know that car that Mr. Miyagi gave to Danielson? It was a 1948 Ford, if Mr. Miyagi gave Daniel a car today, it'd be an 87 Ford.
Yeah.
That sucks.
If Marty McFly traveled back as many years as he did in the original, that's what that one's going around right now too. He would travel back to 1994.
That's awful.
That was fourth grade.
Yeah.
That's the worst.
That's so bad.
All the years that I, all the, whatever the year was, that's the year I finished that grade, which is why it's so easy for me to always, so if it's 1997, I finished seventh grade in 1997. Super helpful.
Doesn't seem like every decade in the 1900s, whatever that is called, that 100 year span.
The 20th century.
20th century. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. Doesn't seem like every decade is so much more defined than they are now. Like, if you say the 50s, you have a very specific thought that comes to mind when you think of the
50s. Well, it's because things change so much more quickly now because we're in a digital age.
It just seems like it all, after 2000, it just kind of blends.
It's because you don't have a solid decade worth of...
Also, you're old now.
Totally, but I was not even around in the 50s and 40s and 60s, so... I don't have like first-hand experience of that.
Most people would say the 40s, 50s, and 60s, but you can do it however you want.
I go all over the place.
Did you say the 50s, the 40s, 50s, and the 60s?
The 40s and the 60s.
That makes it seem like they're from different millennia.
See? It's, and every time I said it, you had a thought. Oh, that's what that was like.
Oh, I had thoughts.
Yeah.
You guys think that
they
Donald
call it
Trump...
the 20th century.
You think that Donald Trump should agree to debate Kamala Harris again?
Yeah, I do.
Why? Why?
I just don't think she's very good, and that was maybe the best she could possibly do. And if she's wanting to do it again, I would imagine that her answers would be the exact same as the last one.
All of her answers were just trying to pick on Donald Trump's thin skin. She didn't answer anything. She just was like, oh, and you should see how small his rallies are. I mean, that's all she did.
She did do that. But whenever they'd ask her about her economic plans and stuff, you know, she's saying things like, well, we want to give away $25,000 to people to buy houses and stuff. Like, these aren't economic plans. These are just little, like, stimulus programs that you want to come up with on day one.
How can I take these people's money and give it to these people over here?
Yeah, but if you don't have people following up and pressing her on it, then it just makes her look like she's Santa Claus.
Well, that's why he should not agree to do one unless it's on a network among these. You know, he can pick a few and say, as long as it's one of these, I'll do it.
Which ones?
Fox, Newsmax, maybe News Nation, things like that.
Do you think he should?
No, I don't think he should. I kind of always thought this way about him, but I don't know that he's the best debater. He is the best bomb thrower out there. There is nobody that can toss a bomb like Donald Trump. But that doesn't work on somebody like Kamala Harris. It didn't work on Joe Biden, and the reason it didn't work on Joe Biden is because it makes that person seem sympathetic. It's not going to work on Kamala Harris because that's exactly what she wants him to do, and that way it makes her look like a victim and him look like a bully. And if he doesn't have any better self-control than what we saw in the last one, I don't think it helps him. And also, to your point, Annie, it was 3-on-1. And there's no way she's going to do a debate on Fox. There's no way she's going to do a town hall style
Zero
debate.
Zero chance.
There's no way. So it's like walking into an ambush when you know it's going to be an ambush.
What is let's ask these questions. What does Trump have to gain, measurable gain, from debating again? What can he do? What can he say? How could he get people to shift in a way that he couldn't if he doesn't debate?
Yeah, I think if he comes out and really is disciplined with his message on the economy, I think he can make people focus back on his number one issue. That would be the gain.
What's his number one issue?
The economy. If he's disciplined in talking about that.
But I think he could do that better if he went on to Fox and did a town hall, and Kamala Harris doesn't even have to be there.
What, when you say if he can do that, what's the percentage chance that he can execute that in the way that he needs to execute it in order to make the impact that would make it worthwhile, worth the risk?
I'd give it about a 5%. I mean, I think there's a gradient there. I don't think it's just that he knocked it out of the park. But he could not take the bait, which he did a lot in that first debate, the bait out of the debate. He could stay on message. I mean, immigration's another one where he, I mean, unfortunately, he's saying different things than any politician has ever said. However, he's been in the public conversation now for over 10 years, and he's saying the same thing that he's always said. So I would like to hear some new things out of him. Maybe he could debut that at a debate.
Why would he need new things if the old things worked?
Well, I hope that they are. That's what I'm saying. I hope
not work to get him elected, but the results should be what get him elected. He doesn't need new ideas if his ideas were working and growing the economy. The problem that Trump is up against now is Kamala Harris is positioning herself as the change candidate, even though she's part of the current administration. Trump, like, you're right on immigration and you're right on the economy. Those are Trump's two strong suits. The third leg of that stool that he needs to do is he needs to tie Kamala Harris back to the Biden administration. She's part of it. It's the Biden-Harris administration. She's the last person in the room. Whenever anything happens, she's the last person in the room. She might be the one in the room with Jill making the decisions now, because who knows what Joe Biden's up to. But I can't look at the debate and say, hey, there's anything that Trump can gain from going on a debate that Kamala Harris even needs to be there for. Just do town halls and talk to the people directly. Go on Fox, see if CNN will organize one. I don't think MSNBC will, but see if any of these other stations will organize a town hall that he'll go on and go just talk to the people. Kamala Harris doesn't need to be there. She's just a placeholder candidate anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I apologize for having an opinion on this.
Hey, do you think, Ryan, that there's more... the risk reward for Kamala Harris, how much does she need it and how much is she risking by having a second debate for Kamala Harris?
Yeah, she must need it. I think that's what we're coming to, is that she wouldn't be challenging him to another debate if she didn't need to gain something. So I think the risk reward for her is probably greater to do a debate than it would be to not do a debate, because
the reward is higher for Kamala.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that she needs to gain some ground, and she thinks that's a way to do it.
What about Trump?
The lower side, you know, I think the worst that could happen to Trump was what happened in the first debate, which was not even really that bad. It was just...
Was it good?
I don't know that it was good or bad. It's weird because, I watch polls and stuff. And the polls after that debate were so strange, because they said that the majority of America, 50-something percent, so not overwhelming majority, but a majority, said that Harris won the debate. They also polled people on key issues, and people felt more strongly that Donald Trump was better on those key issues after that debate than Kamala Harris. So it was a very strange thing. And I think that's kind of what would happen in a second debate, is even if he was at his worst, which you could argue that was about, I don't want to say as bad as he could do, but it was kind of baseline Trump. If you get just baseline Trump again, he's hammering home those same issues. I don't know that it's a negative for him.
Chuck says the Dems in the media will stack the deck against Trump. It will be as unfair as they can make it, just like the last debate. Why would Trump want to give that gift to the vacuous Kamala Harris? No. Ryan?
On behalf of the debate people?
Yeah.
Why would
Trump...
Does it
feel a little bit like 3-on-1 to you?
Want to give...
You don't like it, do you?
Do you feel like you're winning?
here's the post-segment polling shows that people were hearing you guys and thinking, man, I don't know. They make some strong points, but Wiggins really came away the winner there. That's what the post-segment polling was saying.
We're not even done with the segment yet.
Don't worry about
Answer
that.
Answer the question.
I'm going to end the current poll and add a new one and see if you got your head on straight here.
Don't worry about it. But why should he walk into a room and give the vacuous media complex their win? Is that the question? Something like that?
I'll read it slower this time. Why would Trump want to give that gift to the vacuous Kamala Harris?
To Kamala Harris. Isn't I don't think he would be giving her a gift.
You don't think that by Trump agreeing to a debate that that's not playing directly into Kamala Harris's plans?
No, although the case could be made that because she wants to have one, that's
the case.
that she thinks that it would be nothing but a win. But I don't think that it would be, because, again, I just don't think people listen to her and him, even if he's not having his best day, and walk away going, well, she's got it figured out and he doesn't. You know, he's still stronger on the issues, even if he doesn't have a great debate. And again, I will say this, that I don't believe that he should just walk into a debate. He should say, here are my terms. I will do it if it's with these journalists or this network or whatever.
Ryan, it sounds to me like what you're saying, that Trump's advantage or positive outcome would be that Kamala Harris would step on a rake and basically sabotage her own campaign.
I don't think Kamala Harris ever doesn't step on a rake, is what I'm saying.
Well, even she didn't in the last debate.
Yeah, I think she did. She did stuff that just turned people off. She didn't talk about issues. She had a good performance. Like, the veneer was fine, but that's all her campaign is veneer. And I think that came through even in that debate.
But it's been enough to get her this far.
I mean, she's still in it. Like, the polls didn't swap and it become a landslide for Trump.
Yeah, but it didn't go the other way either.
It didn't matter. Not gain. She's not going to gain if he doesn't debate.
Yeah.
I guess you guys showed me.
Dale says, no reason to debate. It's always 3-on-1. He does rallies, town halls, and podcasts and answers the questions. She does none of it, hardly. What I would like to see them do is a debate in the sense that they have, like, get a high-profile podcaster. I don't even care. It could be, like, Bill Maher or somebody like that. Mm-hmm. And have them, have each candidate have the same conversation, the same list of questions with that podcaster, and then produce where it can't be released without the approval, the blessing of both candidates for their part. You ask a question, the candidate gets 3 minutes to answer the question. Maybe the interviewer gets one follow-up to press, correct, or dive deeper, so that they're not there at the same time, but they are being asked the same questions, and you can compare those answers. But to do it with somebody who's high profile, who, you know, if they do have a political lean, people still perceive them to be fair, which I think, I mean, Bill Maher, I know what his political lean is, but I still consider him to be fairer than most people. And I'm trying to think of somebody on the right that the left would consider to be fair. I don't know that person exists. They're so butthurt about everything. And, you know, another thing, we saw some comments on our YouTube live chat right now, and people are asking about something. Did you see the latest things that Donald Trump posted on Truth? Listen, there are two kinds of people who are on Truth Social reading Donald Trump's tweets. Both of those people are guaranteed voting for somebody already. There is not a single person who is on their own checking Truth Social posts that's like, gosh, I just don't know. That person doesn't exist. The people who are checking in to Donald Trump's posts on Truth Social, they need a hit one way or the other to affirm their love and affection or their insatiable hatred and disgust. And they need a hit. I need more. I need another one. Just please post another one on Truth Social. I just need a little bit. There it is. That's it. I mean, that's the way these people are. And it's weirder if you hate them and you're doing it. So, but those people are there.
You're saying that Trump should not talk as much to the Fetterman Trump Pennsylvania voter.
Fetterman's
on
like
Truth Social.
Fetterman's like, Pennsylvania likes Trump. and the people who are the
Have
super far right or the super far left are like, but Truth Social, what about Truth Social? Did you see what he said? And every normal person out there is like, no. No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I'm going to throw this out there.
Okay.
End of the segment. We'll just
going to end the segment here?
We're just going to let this
speak. What makes you think that we need to end the segment here?
Debate moderator.
Yeah.
Even though he would be biased, Joe Biden.
Who does he hate more?
I don't know.
We would find out at the end. I'm okay with that. Let's do it.
If you want to get some viewership.
No cue cards, though.
No, yeah, nothing. He's going to go out there cold, stone cold.
All I want to do is see Kamala Harris defend Joe Biden.
As if he'd go out there any other way.
In front of Joe Biden.
See? Now we're talking big, big audience.
That would be...
You can do that on CBS if you want. I don't care.
Donald Trump should have greeted that in a heartbeat. He should suggest it. Man, I like that idea. Well, Ryan, we're glad we could have this chat with you.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Chris says, our friend Chris says, yes, I want another debate, a fair one if it's possible. That shouldn't be a caveat. We'll be right back. Hey, Carl Middleman from The Morning Show picks the music for our show. We like to try to keep it upbeat And today he had Disturbed's Sound of Silence and Cats in the Cradle.
Oh, like, nice.
Those are the two most saddest songs ever put together.
Cats in the Cradle. There are moments that song is like, wow, what a good song. And others that you're like, this song's kind of funny right now.
Funny?
Yeah.
Why?
I mean, it doesn't fit most circumstances. You don't want to get reflective all the time. But when you're in that mood, that's a great song. Like, going into the last segment of the day, we're probably going to talk about Chinese food and who knows what else. Like, not like,
let's reflect on our relationships with our fathers.
Let me think about my dad. Let me think about what my kid thinks about his dad.
What does your kid think about his dad?
He thinks he's all right.
Has that changed over the course? I mean, when your children are little, they think that you are the best. I mean, you are the best thing on the planet to them. And I don't know that feeling really changes so much, but the manifestation of it absolutely does.
Yeah, my oldest son is 10 now, and he's kind of a people pleaser. He wants to make sure that everybody's like doing the right thing. He wants to make sure that you know he's doing the right thing. As he's starting to get a little bit older into that phase of rebelliousness, it's weird to watch it manifest where you go, hey, go put away your clothes or whatever, and he's like, okay.
This progression is happening right in front of your face.
Yeah, where he doesn't want to do it, he's making that known, but he's also so prone to be the good kid that he's gonna do it anyway.
Are any of your kids exactly like you? Is there one that's like, that's me?
No, not really. They all have different characteristics. My daughter in particular is she's creatively driven 100% of the time. My youngest looks that way.
Are any of them just like your wife?
No, we're a nice mix. Yeah. Everybody's got some different characteristics of everybody.
I've got a daughter who is just like me.
I know which one.
I know. And I have to... Like, when she's doing the things that I do that are not the best versions of me, and she's at 100%, I, like, look at my husband, and I leave the room, and he's like, good decision.
Oh, okay.
It's hard. It's hard to see. Well, I mean, I think the thing that's difficult about it, I think everybody goes through this, and you reflect, there's nature and there's nurture. You're born with certain characteristics. And then you go through life and you're raised in a particular way, and the way you are raised reflects on how you react to certain situations or whatever. And in some ways it makes you into the best version of yourself, and in some ways it doesn't. And then when you see your kid doing those things that at 40 years of age I have learned and recognized the parts of me that I like the least, and it is 100% of the time an active pursuit to not let those things take control. So basically, I'm always doing some version of what my intuition, what my natural reflexive reaction would be to a certain situation. I'm always like trying to pull it back and hold it back. But when you're younger and you haven't learned 40 years of lessons of why doing it this way is never really going to make matters better for you, and you should really work hard to push back against that. When your child hasn't learned those lessons yet and they're doing the things, it's just like a very, very raw reflection that makes you feel... That's the problem. It makes you feel bad about yourself, not about your kid. It's hard to deal with that as yourself, which is when you high five your partner and say, this one's on you. And my husband and I, like, there are things that my son will do that my husband sees 100% of himself in a way that he doesn't love. And that's when I step in. It's difficult though.
Don't you see some of that stuff and it just makes you smile though? I mean, even the negative stuff, it's almost laughable when you see it in a reflection back at you. It almost cracks me up when I see it, even if it's negative. I'm like, of course that you're doing that. That's what I do, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very competitive. My husband's very competitive, but not at all to a fault. I definitely am competitive to a fault. And that's rooted in, admittedly, I've never done therapy. I've never gone to therapy. I have no problem with therapy, but I read a lot and I am very self-reflective. I know that my roots of being so obnoxiously internally competitive are based on insecurities you have when you're young and you're growing up. The reason why you're competing is because you feel like you're not good enough. Now, the way of the middle school girl is not to make yourself better, not to find a better version of yourself, but to squash down everything in your way. Mm-hmm. And so then you feel better about yourself because everything else sucks. That's middle school. But I think knowing that, like, I have had to, and I really was able to learn this lesson in an impactful way as an official, because I was an IHSA volleyball official for about 10 years, and I did a lot of grade school games, did a lot of Lutheran school grade school games, and I realized that the competition at that level, people work so hard. You know what it's like? Your kids are, you said 10?
Mm-hmm. 10, 10, and 7.
In everybody else's world, that stuff doesn't matter. But in their world, they're working their tails off to be the best they can be. They want to compete. They want to compete at a high level. The families know what it costs, literally. The time sacrifice that it costs, literally. So everybody's pouring into this, and you want the best for them. And you want to see success, which usually looks like wins, but you can also see success in like, wow, they're competing at a much higher level, and maybe it doesn't materialize in a win, but you can still measure it that way. But I mean, in my mind, I can think of multiple instances where the win is the only thing that matters. And when entities focus only on winning and they achieve a win, when you walk in the gym and you think that that's the only possible outcome, they never really leave the gym happily satisfied. And it's not really a good place to be. The constant pursuit of winning, the joy that comes along with that is usually in the preparation and the competition that takes place. That the ultimate satisfaction, of course, is that victory. But what I learned as an official is that there's so much more joy that can be had outside of just the what's your record. And I had to watch teams play and compete and see how teams would get better over the course of a season, how you can celebrate, especially with children, like you can celebrate individual victories in a way that makes it even more joyful. That the idea of like winning at all costs and that that's the only thing that matters is so toxic. And I'm still a super competitive person, but I had to watch it from a third party objective position as an official where I had no dog in the fight and I just needed to call the game and be done with it to really embrace that. And that really helped me measure on the other side, like competition is good. Wanting to achieve your best is good. And be serious about it, but like you can have fun along the way also. I don't know. My daughter is super competitive about everything. And so we're always like, okay, ease up there, sister.
Mm-hmm. My son is too. One thing that I've learned from him and from this segment is that it's much more about the journey than it is the outcome.
I don't like your mocking tone.
I'm not mocking you at all.
Because I mean that. I really do mean that. And I don't mean it in some sort of platitude kind of way that, like, we can spend, good Lord, there are people out there just waiting for you to spend your money to them so that you can win. And then you win. And then what? You get to your early bedtime and take melatonin.
Poor.
And then yeah. And you're poor. It's just so, it's so upside down. It's kind of like what we've talked about with Am I Racist? Like, they've turned this thing into an industry. Good grief. Youth sports. What a scam.
That is an industry
what
for
a
sure.
Scam. But more on that later. The YouTube live chat poll, should Donald Trump agree to debate again? 67% agree with Brad and me.
No.
So
no.
We win.
Yeah. No.
One third of you, though, think he should. I think that's a pretty close
It pretty
split.
Much reflects the room.
Yeah, it literally reflects the room. Stick around. The Mark Radin Show next.